Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace. I'm not going to say the catchphrase today. Ooh, I'm breaking tradition. This is Book 11, Chapter 10. On the 30th of August, Pierre reached Moscow. Close to the gates of the city, he was met by Count Rostopchin's adjutant. "We have been looking for you everywhere," said the adjutant. "The Count wants to see you particularly. He asks you to come to him at once on a very important matter." Without going home, Pierre took a cab and drove to see the Moscow commander-in-chief. Count Rostopchin had only that morning returned to town from his summer villa at Sokolniki. The anteroom and reception room of his house were full of officials who had been summoned or had come for orders. Vasilchikov and Platov had already seen the Count and explained to him that it was impossible to defend Moscow, and that it would have to be surrendered. Though this news was being concealed from the inhabitants, the officials, the heads of the various government departments, knew that Moscow would soon be in the enemy's hands, just as Count Rostopchin himself knew it, and to escape personal responsibility, they had all come to the governor to ask how they were to deal with their various departments. As Pierre was entering the reception room, a courier from the army came out of Rostopchin's private room. In answer to questions with which he was greeted, the courier made a despairing gesture with his hand and passed through the room. While waiting in the reception room, Pierre, with weary eyes, watched the various officials, old and young, military and civilian, who were there. They all seemed dissatisfied and uneasy. Pierre went up to a group of men, one of whom he knew. After greeting Pierre, they continued their conversation. "If they are sent out and brought back again later on, it will do no harm. But as things are now, one can't answer for anything." "But you see what he writes," said another, pointing to a printed sheet he held in his hand. "That's another matter. That's necessary for the people," said the first. "What is it?" asked Pierre. "Oh, it's a fresh broadsheet." Pierre took it and began reading. "His Serene Highness, Kutuzov, has passed through Mozhaisk in order to join up with the troops moving towards him, and has taken up a strong position where the enemy will not soon attack him. 48 guns with ammunition have been sent him from here, and His Serene Highness says he will defend Moscow to the last drop of blood, and is even ready to fight in the streets. Do not be upset, brothers, that the law courts are closed. Things have to be put in order, and we will deal with villains in our own way. When the time comes, I shall want both town and peasant lads, and will raise the cry a day or two beforehand, but they are not wanted yet, so I hold my peace. My axe will be useful. A hunting spear, not bad, but a three-pronged fork will be best of all. A Frenchman is no heavier than a sheaf of rye. Tomorrow after dinner I shall take the Iberian icon of the Mother of God to the wounded in the Catherine Hospital, where we will have some water blessed. That will help them get well quicker. I, too, am now well. One of my eyes was sore, but now I am on the lookout with both. But military men have told me that it is impossible to fight in the town," said Pierre. "And that the position..." "Well, of course, that's what we were saying," replied the first speaker. "And what does he mean by one of my eyes was sore, but now I am on the lookout with both?" asked Pierre. "The Count had a sty," replied the adjutant, smiling, "and was very much upset when I told him people had come to ask what was the matter with him. By the by, Count," he added suddenly, addressing Pierre with a smile, "we heard that you have family troubles, and that the Countess, your wife..." "I have heard nothing," replied Pierre, unconcernedly. "But what have you heard?" "Oh, well, you know, people often invent things. I only say what I heard." "But what did you hear?" "Well, they say," continued the adjutant with the same smile, that the Countess, your wife, is preparing to go abroad. I expect it's nonsense. Possibly, remarked Pierre, looking about him absent-mindedly. And who is that? He asked, indicating a short old man in a clean blue peasant overcoat with a big snow-white beard and eyebrows and a ruddy face. He? That's a tradesman. That is to say, he's the restaurant keeper. Vereshchagin. Perhaps you have heard of that affair with the proclamation. Oh, so that is Vereshchagin, said Pierre, looking at the firm, calm face of the old man and seeking any indication of his being a traitor. That's not he himself, that's the father of the fellow who wrote the proclamation, said the adjutant. The young man is in prison, and I expect we'll go hard with him. An old gentleman wearing a star, and another official, a German wearing a cross around his neck, approached the speaker. It's a complicated story, you know, said the adjutant. That proclamation appeared about 2 months ago. The Count was informed of it. He gave orders to investigate the matter. Gabriel Ivanovich here made the inquiries. The proclamation had passed through exactly 63 hands. He asked one, from whom did you get it? From so-and-so. He went to the next one, from who did you get it? And so on, until he reached Vereshchagin. A half-educated tradesman, you know. A pet of a trader, said the adjutant, smiling. They asked him, who gave it to you? And the point is that we knew whom he had it from. He could only have had it from the postmaster. But evidently, they had come to some understanding. He replied, from no one, I made it up myself. They threatened and questioned him, but he stuck to that. I made it up myself. And so it was reported to the Count, who sent for the man. From whom did you get the proclamation? I wrote it myself. Well, you know the Count, said the adjutant cheerfully, with a smile of pride. He flared up dreadfully. And just think of the fellow's audacity, lying, and obstinacy. And the Count wanted him to say it was from Klyucharev. I understand, said Pierre. Not at all, rejoined the adjutant in dismay. Klyucharev had his own sins to answer for. Without that, and that is why he has been banished. But the point is that the Count was much annoyed. How could you have written it yourself? Said he, and he took up the Hamburg Gazette that was lying on the table. Here it is. You did not write it yourself, but translated it, and translated it abominably, because you don't even know French, you fool. And what do you think? No, said he. I have not read any papers. I made it up myself. If that's so, you're a traitor, and I'll have you tried, and you'll be hanged. Say from whom you had it. I have seen no papers. I made it up myself. And that was the end of it. The Count had the father fetched, but the fellow stuck to it. He was sent for trial and condemned for hard labour, I believe. Now the father has come to intercede for him, but he's a good-for-nothing lad. You know, that sort of tradesman's son, a dandy and a lady-killer. He attended some lectures somewhere and imagines that the devil is no match for him. That's the sort of fellow he is. His father keeps a cook shop here by the stone bridge. And you know, there was a large icon of God Almighty painted with a scepter in the one hand and an orb in the other. Well, he took that icon home with him for a few days, and what did he do? He found some scoundrel of a painter. Dot, dot, dot. There you go, that chapter ends with an ellipsis. Another chapter down there. How did you feel about me starting without the catchphrase? Was it weird? Did it make you feel incomplete? It's okay, tomorrow I'll be back to catchphrasing it up. Don't you worry about that. So, what happened here? Well, there was some proclamation. We'll get to that. I don't really understand it. It was a bit confusing. And also, Pierre found out that his wife is up to something. She's up to no good. Mallow Yellow said, with his experience during the battle, hanging out with the soldiers, His dream about the virtues of a simple, quiet life over the boisterous, aristocratic life. And then, finding out André died, I think Pierre is now on the cusp of just saying, F all this, F all of you, I'm out of here. And when he finds out about Helena's intentions, I think we won't see Pierre for a while. Where he'll go, I don't know, but I don't think he'll stay in Moscow. As for the proclamations, I have to be honest, I have no idea what the proclamations were. I didn't understand that story about Verschagin and its relevancy. I feel daft. Obviously, I have missed something. Hey, Mellow Yellow, I feel daft too. Don't worry about that. Hopefully Stratton Love can help us out here, though. Stratton Love says, from my understanding of this chapter, someone has been made a scapegoat. Whoever Verschagin is. The father of Verschagin is trying to put the blame on himself, claiming he's made it all up, so that his son could be set free. In my first reading, I thought Pierre was the scapegoat, but that didn't make any sense because Pierre's spent years abroad for his education, and of course, he knows French. I agree in that Pierre is on the cusp of an F it all. I'd lose faith in humanity, having witnessed everything he's seen. Combine that with the grief from the loss of his best friend André, and his marriage with Helena when he finds out she wants a divorce, and that might tip him over the edge. So some kind of proclamation, which I think is sort of propaganda for the French, was being passed around, and they traced it back to its roots, and the father took the blame for it so that his son could get off the hook. I think that's what happened with the whole Verschagin thing. It's a little foggy for me. Another interesting thing about this chapter is the broadsheet that he finds Rostopchin at Rostopchin's house, and this new broadsheet, I think they're preparing it to be sent out, seems to say all the wrong things. It says that Kutuzov is ready to defend Moscow. It says that Moscow is not at risk of being occupied by the French. And it says that all the Muscovites need to take up arms and fight against the French. All of this is the wrong things. Kutuzov is not in a good position to defend Moscow, and the French are indeed on their way to occupy Moscow, and taking up arms to defend it is not, in fact, the correct thing. It could be that the proclamation was actually more of a truthful thing, because it seems like these guys, Rostopchin, are creating, they're saying all the wrong things here in the broadsheet, so they're actually sort of spreading the lies. So maybe this fellow who has been scapegoated, what was his name again, Verschagin, was merely saying the truth of the situation. That could also be the case. Hopefully we'll find out in the next chapter. That is going to do us for today. Be sure to check out the Patreon account. If you want to flick me a dollar or so per month, you can be a Patreon subscriber. Patreon.com/A Year of War and Peace Podcast. Thank you to the Patreons who are currently subscribed for your ongoing contributions of a couple of dollars here and there. All right. Thank you for listening today. I'll see you tomorrow.